humans, and welcome to Audio Face, an irreverent podcast about music, news, and culture that mostly matters. I am Sean.
I'm Dan.
This is episode 214, the court packing episode. So towards the end of the year, we always go out with our court packing to make sure that we get whatever picks we want for the award show, which comes later in the year, and make sure that we review them or at least just mention it. We have had audibles at the beginning of award shows before for nominations. So as long as it's talked before we start the award show, then we can nominate it for the year. But going on, we also have three album reviews on top of all that too. We have Scenic Drive, The Tape by Khaled. We have Rap, by Tierra Whack. And we have It's All Smiles by No Rome. So three, I'd say pretty short. I mean, Tierra Whack is a drop. I mean, all of these are, you can almost call these drops or something. So they're all pretty short for the records, but it's still something that we want to talk about less.
Yeah, we've got a light smattering of news. The December episode, we usually do like one or two December episodes, and we usually go out on a bang. But I think this is just a light, you know, everything's just a little bit mild, but definitely really fun. I will say the singles block is jam-packed. We have a lot of whompers here, and I want to get into the first one. First is I Hate You by SZA, and there's a little bit of a story behind this track. This was released on SoundCloud sort of anonymously about a couple months ago in August. And this sort of fits with an experiment a lot of artists are doing, where not just motivated by lockdown, but they're kind of trying to experiment with different ways of putting out their music, of expressing themselves in their art form. And I think SZA is even doing that by, or at least tried to do that by releasing music without having her name attached to it, to sort of just see how that went. There's one of three songs, along with Joni and Nightbird. Those two haven't seen releases, but I Hate You is the first proper release that's now in streaming services, and so we got to listen to that.
Yeah, and it's good.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, it has like a sort of, I'm trying to sort of think of like, would it fit in SoundCloud if I like didn't know it was SZA? And I guess it's kind of like synthy and a little bit bedroom pop inspired, but it still feels like very, very highly produced. Not in a good way, not in a bad way, right?
It's just different. It's different compared to a lot of other SZA tracks in the way that it's produced.
For sure.
Like, that's what I like about it, because SZA has a pretty distinctive sound and stuff, and we genuinely like her on it. So it's nice to hear her change it up a little bit with it. And it definitely sounds like a mixture of something that's kind of experimental in a way. That's something that you would find on SoundCloud, and something that you would hear a bedroom pop artist might make if they try to dabble into neopop and all that. But I enjoyed it overall.
Yeah. It was definitely a great track. Next, we have Mercedes by Brent Faiyaz. I will say my first complaint out of the way. Every artist who like raps or like makes a lyric with the song Mercedes has to rhyme it with ladies. It's really like, I've heard it so many times.
I was going to say the same damn thing. I'm like, every time I hear Mercedes, I go, Mercedes, ladies, every time. Like, please stop.
Yeah. There's English is not necessarily a beautiful language, but I think it's a beautiful language, and there's a lot you can do with it. So keep trying. But actually, that's pretty much the only thing I have to complain about the track. It's really solid. My blood too hot to have a lady. My blood too hot. Call these detectives, they investigate. Investigate. They just want no hesitate. No hesitate. They can't get them me to try my baby. It's a party. Like, semi-experimental, like, backdrop in the thing. But I think it's kind of, you know, progressive R&B neopop kind of sound. But Brent Faiyaz has just been like a great voice that has been in the backdrop of a lot of songs throughout the year. And so he's going to be one of my like artists to watch continually throughout.
Yeah. I mean, he was on Baby Keem's record, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's pretty, like, he's been in a lot of things that I've heard. And yeah, definitely one to watch in the future.
Yeah.
Just don't bar on people making songs about with German automakers as their titles.
And I can see some Audis. I haven't gotten a lot of Porsches, but then we're going to have the whole
American... Here we go, Volkswagen, or what?
We're going to have the whole Porsche versus Porsche conversation in America again, and why do that? How about we go to a little bit more indie? We have Good at Letting Go by Summer Camp.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, this is a fun track covering one of my favorite sort of concepts in a song, which is telling yourself you're getting over a relationship when you're very clearly not.
I could do this while you're like tearing up stuff on the sides.
Yeah. But I mean, one of my favorite songs that we reviewed on the podcast that follows that kind of idea is Compensating by Aminé. And I like that because it's sort of like a playful idea of, no, I'm doing totally all right, but actually like I'm sort of like dealing with this baggage in the background as well. I think it's a really thoughtful song that was really well done by Summer Camp. They're this duo out of LA. Really just like synthy kind of fun sounds. I'd say if you like Plastic Beach era Gorillaz or that kind of thing, you'll also very much like this instrumental, the track as well. It just sounds kind of like airy, beachy.
Yeah, I guess I could see that.
What'd you think?
I like it. I thought it was pretty good. I mean, indie has been the past couple indie singles that we've done, I've really enjoyed, and this is another one that I thought is fantastic. It's Summer Camp I've heard for a while, and I've liked their music. So
yeah.
Yes, I've heard of their stuff a couple of times.
Yeah, Summer Camp. We did a release from Norman Lake the last week. We're just kind of finding some local LA indie releases to kind of like promote and do. I think it's a fun thing. We'll continue to do that with other genres, with other, you know, locations next year, especially. We're just, you know, kind of getting started, as they say.
Yes.
Next, listen, we're indulging me, of course.
Deja
Vu.
Oliver Heldens, one of Dan's favorite EDM artists, is like, here we go. But I actually really like Deja Vu. All I get is Deja Vu. Tell me that you feel it too. All I get is Deja Vu. Deja Vu. Deja Vu. Deja Vu. I think it's a solid track. It reminded me a lot of Zoo, ironically, because we have Zoo coming up next. But.
Yeah, more on that very shortly. But while we're on Deja Vu, you know, Oliver Heldens has pretty much solidified his sort of like future house sound and has applied to songs. Nevertheless, and I've been listening to Oliver Heldens' music since 2014, and it goes back even a couple years earlier than that. He still manages ways to keep it fresh, to find ways to... keep it like modern and unique with that sound, and pairing vocalists on these tracks that are just really phenomenal. They really kind of take it next level, and these are really always complete tracks. I love when Oliver Heldens produces things, because sometimes we have gone over on about complaints about DJs in electronic music, but sometimes the electronic mix outdoes the vocalist or vice versa, and it just all doesn't work out. Never a problem with Oliver Heldens. He's released a steady amount of like singles throughout the year because, like we said, there's a bunch of DJs who are busy and doing great stuff, but they don't show up in albums. So it's a little weird to do for this podcast. We're going to work on this more in 2022. Stay tuned.
Yes. And last one, we have M Into It, which is Paul Oakenfield, Zoo, and Velvet Cash. And I really like this track.
I did a BAMize. I was very surprised because, first of all, Zoo, friend of the show, we love talking about Zoo.
This is friend of the show, Zoo.
Yeah, Paul Oakenfold is like, we're going to Dan playing the Orange Box on PlayStation 3, the most inferior version of the Orange Box, listening to Pandora, listening to like electronic music mixes. And like Paul Oakenfold was one of like those early artists, people that were on that. And so to see Paul Oakenfold, who was just definitely a, how do I put, he's very seasoned, let's say. I'm trying to put it in a respectful way. He's been
He's made music for a long time.
Several decades. And so to see like that sort of like seasoned DJing status with someone like Zoo combined with Velvet Cash as well, I think it was a really wonderful mix. It turned out really well. And I think, honestly, I think it turned out better than some of Zoo's remixes with some newer artists recently. I'm not going to like point fingers here or there, but there have been some Zoo remixes, some Zoo tracks collaborations I've heard recently that have been kind of, you know, a little
lackluster. Okay, but a little lackluster, but this is literally, I'm into it.
No. Very much. And Real Heads will play the extended mix.
Always. If it's, I mean, I'm sad it's only 4.5 minutes. I mean, if I say extended mix, I mean, I want like 15 minutes.
Yeah, six minute minimum.
Six minimum, exactly. Six extended mix, like, we know regulation extended mix size of like 6 minutes, so.
I have a feeling that 2022, whether the music industry does this or not, we're just going to be going very into electronic music. We're just like chomping at the bit here after the past couple episodes.
I mean, I'm ready. I mean, I've been getting some of my house stuff for future episode ideas and stuff. So, you know, we're going to go into it.
I also just went to a house show this past weekend and got a lot of fun out of that. But
I miss doing those. Well, it's been a while.
Soon. Anyways, do some plug-a-roonies. Thank you for checking out the singles. You can send us some single suggestions by going to emailing us at audioface@syndicate23.co. We love getting your suggestions for music, and we will listen to them on the show and we will review them. Singles rule still applies, but we really want to hear from smaller artists out there who just want to get some exposure for their work or opinions on their work. Please send it our way. Speaking of Syndicate 23, that is the membership platform kind of content thing behind Audio Face and the other shows that I'm working on, including Power Report, Dan from the Internet. And so you can contribute to all that we're doing for a small amount of money per month, and then you can get a bunch of bonus content that Audio Face will be doing more in 2022. But there's already bonus content for Power Report up right now, and there's going to be community features, other award stuff. Should be really great. Next, of course, Audio Face Awards. Sean alluded to that earlier in the podcast, and that is going to come out, you know, usually a little before Christmas, sometimes a little bit after, but it'll be before the year ends, that's for sure. After that episode comes out, we're going to take a break as we usually do, and then barring any unforeseen terrible deaths from musical artists like we did with the MF Doom episode last year, we'll return for Audio Face in, you know, late January. The 2021 AF playlist, we are really rounding that out because that is all the best music of 2021. Just go, everyone's going to be doing year in review things. Just listen to the year in music with that playlist. Listen, it's in the podcast description of all the videos. It's in the podcast description of all the podcasts, of course, in the video description of all the videos. You know what it is. And then follow Audio Face on Twitter at Audio Face Pod on Twitter and Instagram. And thank you, Peter, for mastering all these episodes. Peter works for Dead Music Productions at Dead Music 666. And with that, let's go into the news stories. And unfortunately, I guess we have a little bit of a death corner.
Oh, God. Oh, Lord. So
what had happened was,
Jesus, I don't even know how to get into this story. But so, you know, we talked about the whole Astroworld Festival, the insaneness that happened of the people that were killed, everything, the mismanagement, the lack of care from, you know, Travis Scott himself to management to everybody. There's so much on that. We've talked about it a couple of times on here.
Yeah.
But apparently, they were filming a documentary at the time when it happened, and Hulu had it on their platform, onto their streaming services, but they had to remove it because, you know, reasons.
Yeah. Too soon for 200, please. So
yeah.
apparently, so people were really upset because Hulu just like popped up this documentary that was just like like the Astroworld story or whatever. Astroworld Concert from Hell was, I think, the title. And so it was kind of sensationalistic. But it turned out to be a rebroadcast from the local Houston affiliate of ABC News. And they, as many local affiliates do in America, they rebroadcast their programs on Hulu. And so that rebroadcast was not sanctioned from Hulu. It wasn't like a Hulu higher up corporate documentary. Don't get into the corporate mess of Hulu because that will get messy. But it wasn't Hulu sponsored in the same way that Netflix might make a documentary or HBO Max might make a documentary, right? It just Hulu happened to host it on its service. It's from the ABC News affiliate in Houston. They have every right to do a documentary on those things because it's the Houston local news affiliate. So, of course, that makes sense. But it definitely appeared to be unclear of where that was coming from. And so Hulu pulled the documentary, at least right now, because... yeah, a lot of people were saying, hey, this is in mad poor taste. This is not a good thing to do this soon. And we do know, like, there were, I think, yeah, Apple was live streaming the concert. And so, like, they have had a lot of footage of that. And so it's not clear, bless you, it's not clear where that footage is going to go necessarily. But we are going to definitely, you know, I think a lot of people want answers, but we don't want to, you know, watch tragedy porn, right? We don't want to just...
yeah, exactly.
We don't want to, like, watch a documentary that's just recounting suffering and all this, for all these other different reasons, because we already get enough suffering in society already. But, like, it is... doesn't do justice to the point of trying to find answers to the extent that a documentary can find conclusive answers to any sort of event. But of course, it's also vastly disrespectful to the victims, those who lost loved ones, anyone with empathy or conscience to kind of put that out without any sort of awareness as to what it is. So it seems like a good move on Hulu, but I hope that inevitably, because there will be a documentary on this, I hope they do it with some care and respect to people who lost loved ones.
Yeah, of course. It's
and it's not speaking of... there. Yeah, not speaking of care and respect for lost loved ones.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
HBO Max, this is the direct opposite. So HBO Max is making this documentary. This is a Juice WRLD documentary. Because HBO Max is premiering it. It's called Juice WRLD Into the Abyss. And a trailer premiered for it.
That's a terrible name for it.
Yeah, considering... and I'll read from the press release. The film includes a wealth of never-before-seen footage, including several unreleased tracks and a dozens of industry... interviews as it details Juice WRLD's struggles to reconcile his meteoric rise to fame with underlying mental health issues and growing dependency on prescription drugs. Juice WRLD passed away in December 2019 from an accidental drug overdose. That's not the press release anymore. I'm kind of just providing some context also from the article as well. But yeah, I also remember it was, 2 years ago on a court packing or just before court packing episode where we had to start the episode with a Juice WRLD song because that was when he was found like dead on that, like overdosing on that plane. And yeah, so this is another case. We've got a little bit of the trailer that we can like put in the video part of this and like you can listen to it for the podcast.
He was so good at articulating his feelings. We ain't realized that's the way he feeling because it's turned into so much beautiful art. It was hard to separate the two.
You know, you tell your lover that you feel like you got anxiety. You feel like you got depression. They don't look at you like you're crazy. That's not how it should be. That's how it is. And that needs to change. And hopefully I'm one of those people that could bring that change. Sometimes the shit gets overwhelming, but this is what I ask for.
I say certain things so I can have conversations with my friends. If people get it and it relates to their life, then it's meant for them to get that shit.
Juice was a therapist for millions of kids, a voice of that generation.
I want to say thank you and I love you to all my supporters out there. This is your world. You can do whatever you want to do.
But, I worry about how tasteful slash tasteless this might be.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't like the way they worded it and everything. It's just, it's not that great.
Because
especially because of all the mental health stuff, all of the abuses and everything of drugs, you know, what we've talked about ad nauseum on this podcast, that's not the way to put it out there for the masses and to honor him too.
Yeah, it's weighing a lot of things. So like we've talked about Juice WRLD, we're going to continue to talk about like Posthumous Records and things like that, where you have situations where we're covering Posthumous, we're talking about Posthumous Records a lot, honestly, right? And when those come out, a big question is, how are those artists respected when it comes out?
Exactly.
I mean, when I was reading the press release, when it said like, oh, we've got never before seen footage and several unreleased tracks. I mean, yeah, that's usually comes, it's par of the course for these things. But the idea of a Juice WRLD unreleased track, I'm sorry, isn't special to me anymore, because posthumous Juice WRLD has been releasing music at a steady, consistent clip since his passing. And like, along with the other posthumous releases, we just sort of had to reconcile and like move with that. But that's just going to be something for, you know, Juice WRLD diehards and fans, of which there are a lot of, because you can cash in heavily on dead artists because people love streaming their music. And you have to reconcile that with something I've talked about in the podcast a lot, which is a concern with the fact that I don't think the music industry is really coming to terms with stuff that we were talking about around the time Juice WRLD passed, which was he had people around him, managers, who saw how many prescription drugs he was using, saw all the stuff he was doing, and were maybe enabling him, or at worst, not setting him aside and going like, hey, you have a great career coming on, you have a lot ahead of you, we need to like nip this drug addiction in the bud right now, because you're going to get hurt, you're going to hurt a lot of people, and you're going to like, yeah, just throw your career and life away, unfortunately. But there are people who didn't do that, and Juice WRLD's not the only story about that. There are dead artists. There are living artists who are about to die. Unfortunately, we will hear about this any day, week, or month now, who will die of overdosing. And a big part of that will be people around that artist who are yes-manning, enabling, not standing in there and saying, like, we need to save you from yourself at this point.
Yeah.
So, basically, all I just hope is this documentary does more of what I just said than
yes.
tragedy porn, which it seemed like, you know, we're worried about other documentaries doing, but we shall see.
All right. Well, going into the music of the day, we have our first album review. We have Khaled's Scenic Drive in parentheses, the tape. 9 songs, 28 minutes long. So in that awkward space of drop album type thing, but
yeah. I'd say it's a fairly a drop. It's under 30 minutes. That's drop, and we've for folks newer to the podcast, we usually say we try to separate drop from album basically for like the length of how long it is. But we've gone over time and realizing that okay, drops are not just like these random things that artists release. It's actually something that artists can do a really good job of turning it into a full album. Like they can do a really good job of telling a lot within that small amount of time. So yeah, this is a drop. But I think this is actually, I was a little bit lukewarm on Khaled's project Free Spirit that came out last year. 2019,
we both
sorry.
Were. Yeah. 2019, yeah. We both didn't like Free Spirit. Thought it was a little monotonous with it.
Yeah, this is return to form for me.
Yeah, I mean, there's still some things in here that I think can sound a little too monotony, but there's things in here that I think are actually pretty good. And it's definitely a step in the right direction for Khaled, because we were both worried going off of his like success with collaborations. You have Talk with Disclosure and a couple other tracks. You have the one with Billie Eilish as well that came out a few years ago. The album that came out 2 years ago that we reviewed, you have that. You get into the trap of neo-pop where you can get comfortable making music that is easy to listen to, that is easy to produce, but you don't step out of that box that you're in. But this to me is him trying to get out of that box. He's like still solidly in there, but at least he's walking to the door. He's not like in the middle of it, just sitting down on the couch, passed out. Now he's trying to get out and branch and do a little bit different on it, especially the tracks on here that have the features, but we'll get into that in a little bit. Starts off with the intro. Speaking of Talk, starts with the intro of Alicia Keys, and it actually plays that little part of the track and some other stuff, which I think is kind of cool, like a little homage to earlier work and some other stuff, especially when you're always compared to it as an artist. And that could be difficult to do because you're like, oh, what's the next thing that's going to blow up, or what's the next thing that people are going to like? And you can get stuck of trying to recreate it, or you do the hard thing and try to push yourself forward.
Yeah. I think this record, album, drop, whatever you want to call it, shines the most with its features.
Yes.
Like Retrograde with Black and Lucky Day. Wonderful pairing. Phenomenal. Whoever's doing A&R there is just like, great job.
Fantastic. Carlos Glax and Lucky Day is fantastic.
something. Got a little comfort in the pain. Ain't no fucking love on your brain. Cause if it was, you would think about everything that I gotta think about. They fucking with me for the benefit. How am I supposed to know when everybody sound the same in a new Lambo? Vroom, vroom.
People don't understand me calling it black with a six clack. It's because it's clack.
Spelling. Yeah. It's well, 2D said it, so it's definitely canon now.
That's right. That's my excuse. 2D said it. That's why I say clack.
Yeah. And you really kind of get like for it being a drop, you get a who's who of what's really good in I am not gonna harp on that the Grammys calls this progressive R&B, but neopop, like this soulful newer trend. You get Majid Jordan, Jid, Ari Lennox, Samina, like we said, and now I'm just kind of naming some of my favorite songs because All I Feel Is Rain, especially. You get a sound from Jid that I think is just very resonant, very, very powerful, like very emotional. And I think when you get Khaled singing along with that emotion that Jid's providing there. Say the pain is you by surprise. You made it seem like you were down. Now you switch sides on me. I know everything, you don't gotta hide from me. I can see it all looking in your eyes. Tell me what I wanna hear, but it's still a lie to me. Never knew you'd be the one to live a double love for me. All I feel is pain. When you creep out in the night. It's just such a really nice mix, and I'm glad that, again, there's a lot of really solid pairings on here. Even going back to the Black and Lucky Day thing, like Lucky Day is just really pushing funk and like music and indie and neo-pop forward. And together just made that song so silky smooth. So when this album works, I think it really works. And I think that, it's not trailblazing in any way whatsoever, but Free Spirit literally felt boring sometimes. Like it felt like a snore. It felt long, because it definitely was long, but it felt like there were just a lot of songs in there that weren't just not special for neopop or R&B or Khaled, but just like straight not even filler worthy, which was kind of frustrating from like, this is supposed to be like the pop king of 2019 at a certain point, mostly because of that disclosure speech. But this is a substantially better. Like, I feel much better talking up Khaled as an artist with Scenic Drive the Tape, truly.
Yeah, 100%, because this, it gives you a longing for what else he has in his back pocket, what else he could do, especially with the features. To me, that shows you that he still has tricks up his sleeve. He still has something to give. His Scenic Drive, I've thought, wow, okay, then he's just a one trick pony. But with this, it's better. Like All I Feel Is Rain with Jid is fantastic. Retrograde is fantastic. I like Open with Michi Jordan as well. Those tracks, like, those show me like the best of neopop. And within those, now I want to see what more you can do. Give me something else, because now we know, okay, we got that sound. Let's push you a little bit forward too. But I think it's great, good step in the direction. I'm glad. I was kind of ready to go into this a little disappointed because that's what happened last time, but prove me wrong. It's good.
Yeah. I think we kind of round that. I will say Scenic Drive at the end is a really nice mix with Ari Lennox and Samino. And that as the title track is pretty solid. Overall, yeah, I'm happy with Khaled on this release. Arbitrary scale. We do arbitrary scales every single week on Audio Face, because if we gave it an actual ranking with a number or a letter, you would just get mad about it. And so we'll give you something random for you to get mad about anyways. This week is going to be sports manager sackings or firings for Americans.
Coaches, managers, whatever you want, because we've both have years of experience in different sports and different managers getting sacked all the time. So, this is why we do an arbitrary scale. Let's say we got our up our sleeves. For me, this is Peter Laviolette from the Philadelphia Flyers in 2013-14 season getting fired after 3 games. I will never forget that because I hate Peter Laviolette. He coached the Nashville Predators for a long time, and I hate the Nashville Predators. So,
how rough is hockey where you get 3 games and you're out? Oh, man.
They're wild. Like,
how bad were the losses?
Pretty bad. I mean, they're 0-3-0. Granted, the Flyers are pretty ass then. I mean, they still kind of are. But, like, it was a brutal firing.
Yeah, Flyers fans, please comment below. No, okay.
No, I'll wear my Pittsburgh hat just to piss him off.
I'm going to give this friend of the show, Doc Rivers, former Clippers head coach.
Beautiful.
Who, everyone says, listen, Doc Rivers, he's got the sauce. Everyone loves Doc Rivers. But like, the man is worse than at closing than the teams he coaches. And that's saying something. I mean, the Clippers were already a bad team, but I feel like the Clippers stench is still there with Doc Rivers gone. Like, every time I watch a Clippers game, it's just like, when are they going to lose?
Yep.
That's the exciting part about Clippers game, is figuring out when they're going to lose. This is coming from a Clippers fan.
It is. So, I guess more on the death corner of audio face, because this is just today, and this one is really sad.
A number of different artists, let's say, like, they led a tribute to Virgil Abloh.
A ton of artists. I mean, Frank Ocean, Drake, Weeknd, Pharrell, Kanye, a ton. We're paying respects and tributes to Virgil Abloh. He's a really big pioneer in streetwear. He was famous for Nike collaborations. He did the Off-White things. If you saw the Off-White collaborations and stuff with Nike, he was one of he's the main designer for that, and a bunch of other stuff that he did in streetwear, and it was very, very important to that. But he passed away last week after battling cancer the past 2 years, and the music industry, because you heard like references to Virgil all the time. Like Drake would reference Virgil all the time, just because it's a big influence in streetwear and in wardrobes all over the world and stuff. So it's sad when I heard about that too, and had a major influence on a ton of artists.
Yeah, and by major influence on a ton of artists, we're not just talking about streetwear and fashion, because that's come with celebrity and music and all these other things. It comes with the territory of how you appear, the covers, the photo shoots, etc. But that is to say, like, Virgil Abloh would actually, like, meet with artists and, like, you know, talk with them about, like, art. And, you know, Virgil Abloh wasn't necessarily a musician by trade, but, like...
He's a true artist, is the thing, yeah.
Yeah, like in that way of figuring out how to convey emotions and talking to other artists about that and being real and open about expressing themselves. Just like so many different artists, ones from all over different sizes, would have photos of them with Virgil Abloh, all different genders, all different colors, like just very wide ranging thing. He was just really trying to, work with other artists, musicians, etc., to make sure that they were getting their expressions like done as well as possible. And yeah, like Sean was saying, he was a real pioneer in the fashion world, in the fashion sense, and his influence on music as well, just with actual artists, also just like can't be overstated. I mean, so there was at like Art Basel and a bunch of other different like art kind of gallery thing, just major showings of love and support for Virgil Abloh. And yeah, it broke super it broke basically right after recording the podcast. It's like a little bit later news, but definitely condolences to family, friends, music world in general.
Yes, 100%. All right, moving on. Second album, we have Rap ? By TRL, just a 3-song drop. TRL is one of our favorite experimental rap artists. She's wild and crazy, and I absolutely love it.
Yeah. TRL, perhaps more than any artist, and I mean like any artist period, does a lot with a short amount of time. And like her landmark release, Whack World, was that 15-minute album with 15 songs. Like, each song was a minute, like, little vignette of things. And it just sort of, like, blew people's minds. Because, like, it was catchy. People liked it. But, again, like, the songs were only a minute long.
I think her and Jai Paul are the two artists that have, like, almost revolutionized the music industry with a tiny bit of music. Jai Paul may be, like, 3 songs and an album that's not even finished. And that's it. And like completely revolutionized the industry. And TRL, same thing. Because you don't get artists normally who will blow up with that short amount. And I like her music. But anyways, going into Rap, definitely the experimental side of it. And Stand Up, I love it as the opening thing for it. I really like it.
and all the fakes sit down. Let me fix my crown. I really only smile just to show my grill. Rather have the skill than the sex appeal. Signed the Lego deal just so I could build. Hammer time, baby, this is not a drill. 6 feet, nigga, you ain't looking right. Straight edge hanging with the crooked type. First class told you.
Yeah, it made me laugh, but I love the way it's very understated and undertoned with the subdued bass in the background and the drum, and it's really simple, but you have all of these tiny little sounds in the background. If you actually crank up the sound, you can hear it. You hear like a tiny bit of electronic like strings in the background, little things here and there that are actually make the track a whole. It's really cool to hear that. So I always respect this fine details and stuff when artists do that, and I really like it. Her flow is fantastic. It gets into it, and it feels like this is what Kanye West would sound like in 2021 if he wasn't off the piss crazy. Like, to me, this almost like can sound like that experimentalness that you want, you know, and rap and in modern music, but produced and made very well.
Yeah, I think with Millions especially, you get that as well. It's weird because usually we preview three tracks on an audio face review, and we've only got three tracks. So I guess for the sake of not doing the whole thing, I'll just talk about the two. Because then you have Megan Good in the middle, which is a good one. But the thing you said about Kanye, because like when you're talking about old Kanye, like as much as we've shit talked him on audio face, like that's a very high bar you're clearing. Like, better be
Graduation is one of my favorite rap albums of all time. Like,
and a lot of people would agree with you. Yeah, and so when you get something like Millions, where you're just kind of getting that sort of like crescendo like rap where so much is happening together and harmonizing.
Chrome Heart store, we shopping in Vegas. Old friends stuck, they shocked she made it. North Philly zone, I'm a guide to the children. I just play my role as the hero and the villain. Y'all want millions, we want billions. Y'all want millions, we want trillions. Mama's so proud, I don't owe you niggas nothing.
You get, it's almost like the harmonizing you get from like Porter Robinson tracks sometimes, but you know, together in like a rap song that isn't like too overwhelming or crazy. But it's really like older Porter Robinson, like EDM Porter Robinson, not like Nurture, which was a different, also cool thing from this year. But I do love like all the vocals that are hitting around in it. It's just really fun how it's constructed. And yeah, doing so much with a little tear whack, just always. 8 minutes, 39 seconds. Like, there are some, like, electronic music tracks that are just this long, just one song. It's just progressive house, just up and down. But it really makes you look at other artists, and you just sort of, like, turn to them and go, and?
Exactly.
Like,
what can you do? Exactly. Like, well, you got this short amount of time, but can make this. And they're good. All three tracks are fantastic. Megan Good is a very good track too. And just Tierra Whack can do so much with so little, which is honestly a very difficult to do.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for like, you know, like a album from Tierra Whack, because we've seen some songs pop up here and there. Please. Anytime now.
One day.
Yeah. Arbitrary Scale, Sport Manager Sackings. Because you always do an audio face, because who cares about ranking systems?
This is Mike Babcock from the Toronto Maple Leafs after 19 and 20 season, because he was like verbally abusing players and stuff and was a pretty shitty coach. And now he's an analyst on like one of the hockey networks in Canada. And it's hilarious seeing him. I'm like, you realize the entire Players Association and NHL players hate you. I love it.
I'm going to give this Raiders coach John Gruden.
That's a good, John Gruden is a good one. Damn.
Again, doing a lot with a little when it comes to your words.
A little too on the nose for me, but that's good. That's fantastic. Whoa! That's super well, dude.
It would not be audio face if we did not toe the line just a little bit.
Yep.
So here's a conversation we kind of did a little bit earlier in the podcast, but it's kind of a continuation of it. That was based off of an Consequence of Sound editorial by, or Consequence, I guess, by Armand Sadler. it's about posthumous releases. And so, like, I saw this and I'm like, let me save this for another episode because, you know, posthumous releases, we talk about this in Audio Face all the time. And it's kind of just, kind of like takes a look at different vignettes, not just in recent rap and music history, but in old, like, rap and music history. Take Biggie's album, for example, Life After Death, which came out 16 days after he was shot and killed. So, like, that's a posthumous release if we've ever heard one. But, you know, we, I think we all have the idea that we have, like, that was an album that was released, or, like, that was an album that was being worked on before Biggie's death. It wasn't like they reconstructed in the end. But also, like, there were complaints that it could have been better, or it would have been better, if Biggie were around to do some executive producing, maybe cut out certain tracks, move things around, if that was the kind of thing that he was doing with the time. Yeah, critics felt like the albums were thrown together and not, like, neatly arranged. And so I think that was an interesting sort of thing to segment, like, vignette, like I said, because it goes, the article also goes through Pop Smoke's and all the posthumous releases after that. XXXTentacion's, all those posthumous releases. You're getting to Mac Miller, which is kind of a different feeling. You're getting to Doom, which is also a different feeling in itself. And, like, these are all posthumous releases, but in each case, they're a little bit different. Like, Doom and Czarface with Super What, that was kind of like a pretty much well in said project. Like, it was finished before, like, while Doom was still alive, more or less. Just like the last finishing touches were put on by Czarface. And that was, like, one in a series of products that had already been kind of done. So sometimes posthumous records make sense in that case. But then
they're already like in the process, like, they're queued up to be released.
Yeah. And then there are other times where, yeah, like with Pop Smoke, for example, every single Pop Smoke release or record is unfortunately, like, a same iteration of the drill thing he was kind of doing, or because it's, you're taking recordings he made and trying to splice him on songs that he otherwise wouldn't have been on, like with Dua Lipa and things like that. It sounds a little bit off sometimes.
Yes. And there's a lot of posthumous records you'll get where, you know, it's a couple of years from their passing and it's like, oh, this is what we think it would sound like, or the sound like. You don't know what it's, you're never going to know exactly how it's going to sound like unless it is completely finished. By the time of their passing, then sure. But if not, I mean, this is why we have the thing of, was it Anderson .Paak who got the tattoo?
Yeah.
Of do not release my music without my consent if I die or something like that, which is exactly for this. Because they're, now we're really having that conversation of what are you going to do with all of these vaulted up things? Because there's artists that don't want stuff released. There are artists that want stuff released and, after their death. It just depends. But, like, micro companies make a lot of money from this. Families can make a lot of money from this too. So
I also think it's a moment where we have to ask some very fundamental questions about, like, what is an album? Like, what do we think of as an album? We usually think of albums or even songs as, like, a representation of an artist's feelings, or like an artist or a band or that group of people. It's supposed to be like that distillation of art, right? But once you get into posthumous releases, then it's someone else's interpretation of that artist, or someone else's sort of like layering or printing of that artist. It's like you're copying their handwriting and then rewriting it, as opposed to having that artist doing it. It feels artificial to fans and listeners who are listening very closely and connect to that kind of intimacy with an artist. And so I just don't think it's something that very often resonates with people. That being said, like, a big point against me and what I'm saying is that these posthumous records, like, I'm not going to use the word kill. These posthumous records stream successfully. Like, they do, like, number one charting. People are constantly listening to them. And people love hearing about posthumous artists and dead artists. Like, I mean, because of podcasting, you can extrapolate maybe a number of reasons why this is the case, but our XXXTentacion episode is the top episode of Audio Face. There could be a number of reasons about that, but I think one contributing factor is because that was a dead artist. And a lot of people, there's a lot of attention about these artists who, like, have these tragic passings, who die very young. People want to listen to music about them and podcasts about them. Whether that's a good idea or not, that's for the XXXTentacion episode to solve for you. But I do like the way this article is written, because it approaches the posthumous thing from a, and we'll link to it in the podcast and YouTube description, but it approaches the posthumous record conversation from a lot of different angles to say, like, this is why we are seeing posthumous records and why we're likely to continue seeing them. Because like you're saying, Sean, I don't think there's a good way to solve for artists having unrecorded or unreleased music.
Unless they put it in a legal sense in writing, like, that's the only way. If you don't have anything and it's up in the air, there's so many different interpretations that you can do.
Yeah, or maybe you do a thing where, like, I authorize these people to work with these posthumous recordings and release it under, like, you know, the Prince project, right? Like it's not necessarily Prince, but, like, you know, people who are sanctioned by Prince to carry on that legacy, the Prince Legacy Project or something like that, you know? But I think it's, we will see in the music industry how this idea develops, because it's profitable at the end of the day.
Yeah. Right. Moving on, last album of the day, we have It's All Smiles by No Room. It is 10 songs, 27 minutes long. No Room's first full project since Rimp Indo Hisashi in 2018, which we reviewed and generally liked. He's been on some other things, like he was on Spinning, the track with Charlie XCX in 1975, a couple other things and stuff that he's done here or there, but first full project in a couple of years. Definitely, like, with No Room, like, you get a sense of, especially on this album, I feel like he's starting to really branch out into his own voice, into his own thing, because I think these other records and other things that he's done, he's really relied on other people helping him to make it, or other people helping to contribute and stuff. To me, this is the first real, like, okay, this is just No Room. Really isn't any, there aren't any features on this record, I don't think, and let's see what he has. And generally, I like it. There's some problems I have of it. But, like, I think Space Cowboy as the opening track is a pretty good, like, really glitchy indie pop song. Like, I actually really like it, especially towards the end where it gets experimental and weird. Nice to hear that from him, because the past record, you'd see more of that, like, solid indie pop sound or electro pop sound, which it can get a little monotonous after a while, or, like, if you have that one trick pony ish with it. But this, you could see him trying to branch out a bit, especially with his vocals too.
Yeah, I think vocally No Room shines on this album a lot. I think where I get kind of where the album gets sort of starts to fall short for me is where I think it has that syndrome where there's a lot of ideas that's kind of throwing out there, and it's not sure which ideas it wants to execute on. And as a result, you get kind of this meandering throughout the album that then gets to feel like, okay, I'm in a weird position where this album sounds very unique and interesting, and yet it is still kind of droning on as though it is stuff I've heard before.
To me, it's just, I didn't drone on at all for me. It just wasn't very cohesive. Was going to be my big complaint with it. There's a lot of ideas in there, which I like. Like, example, from, you have Space Cowboy, I Want You, and When She Comes Around. Those are all three very different tracks. And it's nice to hear, like, the different ideas. Like, When She Comes Around, I think it's a really, really good, like, indie track with the way it is. I love, like, the brazen guitars and stuff in there that it, like, kind of stops up halfway through. As with this, like, glitchy sound and stuff in there. The other tracks are more electronic focused. You still kind of get that glitchy sound here or there where it kind of chops up, stops, starts again and all that. But those three tracks are very different, and it's hard to listen to all three of those and think they belong in the same place, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
That's where it can go around for me, where it's, but again, like, he's a newer artist. It's taking it, you know, I always take everything with a grain of salt. It's definitely nice to hear him branch out, and I'm very impressed with his vocals a lot, because I think his vocals are very understated on his other records and with all his features as well. I think the features overtake him. It's nice to hear him. And it's great. Yeah. Like Secret Beach, the sixth song, fantastic. I really like that, the way it's produced. It's almost like a combination of like My Bloody Valentine with bedroom pop, with electro pop. It's like a lot of different sounds at once, so it's very unique in the way it's made.
Yeah. After that, you have Remember November / like Bit Crush Your Life.
Maybe she think it's slow. I really hate you though. Leave you back on the floor. Put your fist up and go. Some shit, maybe I blow up your nose. Maybe that's the way it goes. Maybe that's the way it goes. Maybe she take it slow. No, bitch, that maybe it's the way it goes.
I remember you told me they can take all your money if you do enough talking.
And I... there's a bunch of songs with asterisks in them. I'll call them the asterisk songs, I guess. Like also It's Not Love, Love 3-3, Winter in London or whatever. Where it's doing a really, really cool like electronic experimental indie kind of thing. And I mean that like in all the ways. Like it's glitchy. The drums are kind of in a lot of different paces and synchronizations in there. Like, it's really cool what's going on there. And as I kind of listen to it again and again, I'm kind of like, I'm glad that they didn't, or No Rum didn't, like, bunch all of those songs together.
No, they had to be spaced out.
Yeah, they had to be spaced out. But with that spacing out, I still feel like there is some cohesion that's missing. Because, yeah, I think maybe drone on is not what the phrase I was looking for. But I think what I was trying to say is that these songs have so much unique coming out of them, but yet I come away from the project not with that feeling like, wow, I just heard like a project with a bunch of unique tracks. I've come away from the project going like, okay, I heard a lot of ideas in there, but album-wise, playthrough-wise, I'm not sure exactly where like No Rum is trying to take this. I want him to decide and like paint that path a little bit, or if it's like a bunch of different paths, space that out or organize that out in the right way. Just like set yourself up for us to be able to see that vision without the distractions.
Yeah, and with it, it leaves me wanting more, which is a good and a bad thing, because it was 3 years that Rip Into Hisashi was released, so he takes a bit time between his work, which is fine with me. Like, the more time, the better. But now with this, is okay, next project, next EP, next record, whatever it is, I want more cohesion with it. Now you have a lot of these different ideas, different sounds, which are very unique, and I really haven't heard that much of. Some of it can sound a little similar, but a lot of those tracks are very unique in the way he makes them. So now you have those ideas. Now try to make those ideas into newer sounds and newer tracks, and then make it cohesive and make it flow, which is very difficult in the way that it's structured. I mean, with experimental stuff, it's always hard to do, but it has been done before. Like one of my favorite artists, Neon Indian, you could do it and make a experimental glitchy pop, like almost bridging the gap between hyper pop and indie and making it into a record. And you can't do that. It's very hard to do. But if you do that, then that's going to be one of the best records we'll hear of that year. It's just not many people do it.
And I also don't even think he needs to go that far, because Remy Wolf, who released her album a couple months ago, just last week, isn't like that far reaching and like, I'm going to push all the boundaries of indie. But it pushes quite a lot of boundaries in indie and does a lot with the sound and production work to get like kind of that like squeaky synthy sound and noise to it, and like that all lands pretty successfully with the range that's doing now. I think it's trying to, like, I think that album decided more with its range and kept to it for its benefit. And yeah, No Rum can decide to a different range and keep to that, and it'll be for his benefit as well. But yeah, I definitely am not discouraged. I just want to see more, and with every like project that No Rum releases, I think I become a little more clearer on how I think No Rum's direction should go. But of course, that is fully in the right of No Rum to decide and take that. I will just be along for the ride.
Yeah, and he also had the EP I Forgot Crying in the Prettiest Places in 2019. And I actually didn't like that one as much compared to Rip into Hisashi, but I think this record with It's All Smiles is a really big step in the right direction for him. So excited for him. Let's see what happens. I genuinely like it. There's a lot of good sounds in here. So do that what you will. Do with that what you will, I should say.
Yeah, I do remember Stone in the Valley, or at least you mentioned it as a new single from No Room in 2019 when it came out. I remember that name. Arbitrary Scale?
Well, yeah, we have Coach Sports Manager Sackings. This is Anthony Lynn from your Carson Chargers that got fired earlier this year.
Wait, when? Why did that happen?
I don't actually know because I don't really follow NFL. I just remember all of my gym members talking about it because they're big Chargers fans. And every time they do that, I'm like, you're Carson Chargers. It was just beautiful to watch because they're a clusterfuck of the team that have never won anything. Nor are they going to anytime soon.
I'm going to go a little bit out of the range for sports manager sackings. I'm going to go for sports management sackings.
Oh.
This is EA getting rid of FIFA. Dropping it like a hot rock.
I'll allow it because it's arbitrary and who gives a fuck, and that makes me happy because I hate EA with a passion.
No, it's like, which do you hate more, EA or FIFA?
It's like that's a damn good question.
That's a thinker
right there.
No, I will again tie it into the album somehow. It's just a lot. You're going for a lot. EA is just going, yeah, we just don't need FIFA anymore. That's a lot. That's a lot. You just go into the details of what that means, but you're probably right. You're probably right. EA doesn't need FIFA. They just need the licensing for the teams, which FIFA itself does not have. EA does. So their move. Hashtag no sports. Anyways, moving on to quick hits. Moving on to kind of politics, but not politics. The nation of Barbados is now like officially a nation because... Barbados has abolished ties to the English monarchy. Barbados used to be part of the Commonwealth, which is kind of like an association of formerly British colonies that are more or less independent from England, but still have some kind of tie technically to the crown.
And to the parliament, too. Yeah.
Yeah, and the parliament. There's not really, I mean, other than like, I'm not going to get too into English politics, they're crown dependencies, which are parts of the British Commonwealth that actually rely on England, sort of like the US has territories like Guam and places where like they're not, they don't really have a lot of representation, but they're relying on them. But Barbados was more or less in that Commonwealth space in 1966, where they act independently, they have their own independent government, but they still have these sort of random ties to the English crown. But just this past week on November 30th, Sandra Mason, who just became Barbados's first ever president with completely no ties to the English government. So this makes Barbados its own independent island nation. And the reason why this is a music story is because, to quote her, to quote the new president, "On behalf of a grateful nation, but an even prouder people, we present to you the designee for National Hero of Barbados, Ambassador Robin Rihanna Fenty." quote, "May you continue to shine like a diamond and bring your honor to your nation by your words, your actions, and to give credit wherever you shall do it." So Rihanna is a notoriously from Barbados and is a notorious famous musician who may or may not release an album ever again. And yeah, she's getting honored with this award for a really momentous moment for her home country, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, I mean, she's done a lot for Barbados and everything too, so it's really cool to see that. We've talked about like her donating millions and millions of her dollars to it too, and actual freedom fighter there.
Yeah, she got ventilators to was able to get ventilators to people on Barbados during COVID, providing housing for domestic violence survivors who were impacted by stay-at-home orders, which was, I remember talking about that, like that's such a galaxy brain thinking for Rihanna to do. Like, that was really smart and thinking ahead. And so I'm glad that she was doing that and putting her actions behind that. I think that's why we gave her a Wilk Award nomination, honestly. But definitely deserved from Rihanna, not just for being a hot celebrity and a good, like, musician, but, like, really doing the work for her country and representing it well. And so that's usually where we would end Audio Face. But as we do every single year, we have the Court Packing episode, our last chance to mention albums or projects or things we liked, if we haven't mentioned them already in the podcast this year, to qualify them for the Audio Face Awards. Rapid fire style, Sean, you have 4 and I have 3. So I think it works out better if you go first.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, how do you want to do that? Because I can lump all of mine together or I can go individually one by one.
I think let's go like sort of like how we do music recs, where we go individually one by one, but like kind of relatively quickly.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm all 4 of mine are film soundtracks. So it's films I have watched or I've listened to the soundtracks of, because some of them I am not able to watch just yet, but will be able to soon. So the first soundtrack I'm going to talk about is Dune, the remake, and actually a very, very good remake, which is rare these days. But the soundtrack is done by Hans Zimmer, I should say, and it's fantastic. I really, really like the way... I mean, Hans Zimmer's done amazing soundtracks his entire career. I mean, you have Interstellar, you have the Batman trilogy, you have, like, so many works that he's done. But with Dune, it really sucks you into the film and sets it up for the way, like, a sci-fi world works. And you really want to be sucked in with the soundtrack, too, because then it gets you into that... I want to just say the vibe, but the emotions of it, the feeling of it, you really get to be feeling that this is the world and you're not watching a film, that you're almost reading a book when you do it right. And all of these soundtracks kind of do that. But I thought the Dune one, hearing it in theaters as well, was very, very good. I was thoroughly impressed with it. I remember when I watched it the first time, I was like, who the hell did the soundtrack? I'm like, looked up as Hans Zimmer. I'm like, not surprised, but damn, this really left me happy. Lots of different unique sounds and stuff that he uses too. He uses a lot of bagpipes in it, which I haven't heard from Hans Zimmer before. And lots of other things to make it more of that sci-fi style and whatnot, but very, very good.
Right. I do not have soundtracks at all. I just kind of went the traditional albums route. Fine. I wanted to review Illuminati Hotties at some point this year. Ultimately wasn't able to get around to it because of, you know, Q4 being an annoying thing. But it's this one, like, women's punk project, and it is another one of those, like, women in indie situations, specifically this subgenre of indie that's kind of like punk, grunge, nostalgia, like callback kind of deal. But this is, like, just really interesting. You have, like, really funny titled songs called, like, Joni, LA's number one health goth. There's a bunch of other different, like, that's a name of a song. It's pretty wild. But it's similar, you know, punk stylings and ways of approaching music, but a newer kind of indie sounds with it as well. A lot of people had this on their top album of the year charts. I don't think I would put it there per se, of like one of the best albums of the year. But if we were doing Audio Face of like a ranking of 50 or so, yeah, I'd put this on there somewhere.
Yeah, that works. Next one, which I like teased a little bit that I wanted to talk about a little bit more too and go in depth of it, is Spencer, the soundtrack of the film titled Spencer by none other than Johnny Greenwood. And he has done actually 2 full soundtracks this year and 1 song for Licorice Pizza, which we talked about last week. So he's been busy. And the Spencer soundtrack is very, very well done. I think with this, it shows the best of what you can do with music in cinema. I mean, we saw it with Phantom Thread, with There Will Be Blood, talked about Dune earlier. There's a couple other films that you really get the sense of the emotion of what a good soundtrack can do, and it can up a film for making it a good film to a great film, or a great film to an amazing film. It has that way of doing that, and the way that Spencer is done with the soundtrack, it's fantastic. You have a couple tracks. Crucifix is really well, and Johnny does something which I haven't heard from him before. He uses a harpsichord a lot of the times because he said he wanted to make it like a jazzy-ish influenced, but also with late medieval sounds and other things. So it's very unique in the way that it's done, and it definitely gets you the somber feeling of the film, and it protrudes it in that way. And yeah, with the way it's done, you can get like a sense of what the mood of the film. Like, I guess that somber feeling, it really pushes that out. And when you have that in a film, it makes it like a second, as I like to say, it can almost make it a third character, a fourth character, of making that soundtrack do that way. And it's fantastic when that happens. Also, the good track is the title track, Spencer. It's just a piano track, and it's very, very good as well. So those are mine from that.
My turn is John Batiste. John Batiste in March released this album called We Are. And it's a really interesting mix of the things we're kind of calling neo-pop or neo-soul, but you also get almost like this really interesting spin on gospel as well, especially with the song Adulthood featuring John Batiste and the Hot 8 Brass Band. It's sort of mixing neo-soul and funk into gospel in a very new way. I generally don't listen to, like, seek out gospel music, just, like, not particularly my genre. But the way all of those things are blended together, where, like, the refrain is gospel and then the bridge and the chorus start to get kind of, like, funky and soul, sort of. The way he navigates through all of these different genres at a time when these genres are really coming back to the forefront in pop music to kind of, you know, be exploited for another round of decade of music self-adulation. The way John Batiste just weaved all of these things through, I think was phenomenal. Even though sometimes real talk, I'm not sure. It's phenomenal. Boys gonna find a soul.
Room for us to grow, yeah. Lord knows I never thought I'd find a superwoman. I know love ain't perfect, but if you're feeling what I'm talking about, say yeah. I never thought that it would be.
Like, I talk about Lucky Day being one of the, like, forefronts of bringing funk back. And I'm not going to say necessarily John Batiste is that, or like his producers, all that stuff are that, but they did something really, really interesting here with the way all that stuff mixes. So yeah, the song I was recommending from that is Adulthood, but the whole record itself was really solid. And I think I got to consider it for maybe at least like the neopop of the year, because it was just a really so much to work with in that.
I definitely want to check that album out. And we were talking about it before in here too. So really looking forward to diving into that album when I have the time to. Next one for me is Flying Lotus with
Flying Mucus.
Yeah, right.
So, I know we're a little bit under the weather today, but like, come on.
Right. Flying Lotus, Yasuke. It's with the Netflix animated series about a black samurai. And Flying Lotus, you know, is one of our favorite artists, one of our favorite experimental artists. He's been around for a long time. And it was really cool to hear him do a soundtrack on an animated series. And it was very, very good. The tracks are short, which makes sense in the setting that they're in. But some of them are very good in the way that they're done, too. So you have, like, you have Crust, you have Black Gold, which is another good one where, yeah. you have that good experimental sound from Flying Lotus, but you also have him reaching into almost like a chill hop sound, which I haven't really heard him do. I've heard him like maybe like tease it here or there, but usually he like mix it up and splice it. But then you'll get like solidly chill hop tracks from him, which I haven't heard too much of. So really cool to hear him branching out in that. And in the context of the way it's done in the series too, it like it gets it that feel and everything in the series. It's good. So really cool to hear him do that. And I want to see him do more and more film, TV, soundtracks and stuff for that, where I think he's one of those that he can really contribute and make something unique in the way it is too. It's cool. It's very, very well done.
Yeah. I think we talked about Black Gold as like a single thing. We just like skipped through it because of, you know, things being complicated. But yep. I have said this a lot on Audioface, especially around the end of the year, that I want to spend more time doing film soundtracks. And maybe we actually would have done it in 2020 and 2021 if films were more accessible to go and see theaters.
The only reason why for me is that I'm just now able to go. Like, I just saw Dune in theaters last year. And it's great because now, like, I can appreciate these more, because last year I couldn't really do anything because I didn't want to count it. But now I can get into these more, which is great. And something that I think needs to be talked about more with music reviewers and stuff in general as well, because soundtracks make up a ton of our music knowledge and our music heritage, and what also you can take from music soundtracks and other things, and you can put that into more mainstream things as well. So there's lots you could do with them.
Yeah, very well said there, especially about like soundtracks being a major part of like musical heritage culturally. Mm-hmm. My last pick will be Thames, If Orange Was a Place. This is her EP, mm-hmm. and we've talked about Thames, and again, and also similarly like Brent Faiyaz, has been featured on a lot of really cool collaborations that we've heard throughout the year. And so getting a project from her is really nice. The EP itself, If Orange Was a Place, is five songs, 18 minutes long. And it's one feature also has Brent Faiyaz found, which I think we talked about as a single. But when you dig into the full thing, you're really just seeing Thames as someone who is like kind of on the cutting edge of this like alternative neo-soul kind of, now we're making so many different genres, it sounds like Spotify now, but like it's neo-soul but almost like underground in a way. It's not like the most like mainstream kind of thing, but the way it sounds, the way it's instrumentally put together, it takes all the right things from indie and alternative, but packs really good production, doesn't feel overly produced, but just still feels really nice. I liked Avoid Things, the fourth track on there, because it has its typical kind of slower, bassier kind of thing and feeling in it.
And if it ain't mine, then we just waste time till a new day. I ain't trying to avoid things, but it's no one, this is my dish. Avoid things. I ain't trying to resolve things, involve you.
But you really get to hear her voice, not just, you know, because we hear a lot about good singers, but the way she pauses her voice and intonates a little bit is something that you're starting to see more in trap music, of course. But the way Thames does it just shows she has a really talented voice, not just with her range, but the way she thoughtfully moves and crafts her voice as an instrument throughout the song. That's just a sign of a really good vocalist to me, is when their voice is more than just, you know, singing. It becomes an instrument in its own right.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's unique when you get that too. It's kind of like Yonzi with Sigaros, where Yonzi uses his voice as another instrument, and there's a couple of people who can do that, and it's very unique talent.
Yeah, Thames is going to be one to watch for this year, next year, yeah. All the years,
all the years. All right, next one. Well, last one, I should say. You have another Johnny Greenwood soundtrack, The Power of the Dog. And this to me is really like right up Johnny's alley, where he like the two things he loves doing is like really beautiful piano ballads and stuff, and then Westerns. So my favorite soundtrack from him is still There Will Be Blood. And with The Power of the Dog, it gets back into that Western feel. The movie is very intense. It's quite good, but it's also done on a book. If you know about The Power of the Dog, I'm not going to say anything, but it's a good film. Go watch it. Benedict Cumberbatch is just fantastic in it. I would say like a good track to listen to is 25 Years, the first one on the soundtrack. but within the film, it's very, very well done. It gets you that setting, and it's really nice to hear the way he likes to do strings, and he almost will deconstruct strings and do things differently and make it experimental, but still accessible to hear. You don't like, with film soundtracks, you can get a little experimental with it, but you don't want it to be a distraction from the film itself. You want it to be, you know, to help along the film. You don't want it to distract from the story or the acting or anything else or the setting in there as well. But with the way he does it in this too, it's very well done. With like towards the end of the film as well, it really gets to be prevalent on the soundtrack as well. So another one that if you can see it in theaters, just to listen to it, it's great. Another good track is the They Were Mine. Again, more of those strings and stuff, which he likes to use in Westerns, which is fine. But overall, very impressed with it as well. So those are kind of my soundtracks of the year that I'm going to have a best soundtracks of 2021, which I want to start doing that more regularly. And I know Dan wants to do that more regularly too, where we go out and watch films just for that too.
No, help me keep me accountable with this. Let's start going to our favorite nondescript movie theater with the nice ass seats and get it cracking.
I want to butter my own damn popcorn.
bringing my own alcohol into the movie theater that says alcohol, keep it ghetto.
Keeping it
55th
y'all.
Street.
Okay. Oh, yes.
Oh my god. That's just been like...
Speaking of soundtracks, you have the Skyrim soundtrack right there. He's like, you want to catch your fade, and it's just the best thing. Da-da-na, da-da-na, da-da-na.
When I tell you 95% of Sam and I's conversations has been keep it at 55th Street, it's for the past month, it's been so bad. But anyways...
when I see Sam, I'll be like, we here on 55th Street.
This has been Audio Face, more or less, other than some roles, which we can bend sometimes. That is the end of what we can nominate in the Audio Face Awards. So once again, here's the schedule. We're going to take a break week, as we usually do, because we're going to spend a lot of time listening to all the music that's come out this year. Genuinely, it's Sean and I's favorite part of the year doing the podcast, because we are only listening to the good shit.
Well, I mean, we also get to listen to the bad shit, but it's to make fun of it, so it makes me happy too.
Yeah, there's a purpose. The purpose driven is what we try to be on this podcast. We also get to go through some of our favorite news stories, kind of our favorite moments of the year. It's a really kind of fun look back. The Audio Face Awards is going to be bigger and better than ever. Sean and I will be in person actually for this, so it's going to be really cool. So that episode will come out. Again, we tried it. It's a big-ass episode with a lot of production work that has to go into it, the biggest one of Audio Face every single year, so it takes more than the usual weekend to turn around. But we try to get it up by no later than Christmas Eve, so you have something to listen to avoid your family while they wonder why you're laughing to yourself and making really off-color jokes. But yeah, so we'll have that Audio Face Awards episode out for you, and then probably a month later after that comes out, we'll begin the new season of Audio Face, where we will be reviewing new albums. We'll also be reviewing more albums additionally for members who join at join.syndicate23.co and support us. We thank you very much for doing so. And yeah, this has been a very eventful, fun year of Audio Face, and I'm excited to round it out with all of the albums that we've got, because as usual, years usually wild or crazy or terrible, but the music is so damn good. And this year, actually more than most years, it's very hard to choose some of these awards. So you want to stick around for that.
We got to have some members content for the Not a Little Bitch Award, because I want to have a fucking wall diagram. I want to have playoff bracket style of the Not a Little Bitch Award, because we got decisions to make.
No, so we're seriously going to have to like have like a non-podcast like podcast, almost like the Deliberations episode, the unreleased Deliberations episode for 50 of the 10s. We're going to have to do that of like sit down and go, okay, decisions time.
No, and I want to be like a graph setting. Like, you literally have a graph bracket of like who you're going to choose, who you're going to battle. I'm like, this guy, like it's got to be, we have to do it that way. It's gonna be
okay, then we're going to have to do that at my place and record that for members.
100%.
What does it mean to play us out? This has been Audio Face 2021, more or less.
Thank you for listening and following us. You can follow us at Audio Face Pod on all social medias. You can follow myself at SW Suarez, if I trust you. And you can follow Dan, whether he trusts you or not, at Dan from the Internet on Instagram, on Dan from the Web on Twitter. You can get the clips from the show on YouTube at youtube.com/audioface pod, where we post just about daily. For clips, and go ahead, comment, and
subscribe.
Actually, tell us, and also subscribe on all whatever your podcast platform of choice is, and rate us on those apps as well. Let us know how we're doing, and also give us your ideas for music awards and stuff too. Your favorite albums of the year, favorite tracks of the year, your least favorite tracks of the year. That's what I actually really want to know more of, is what did you not like most? Because that's where it gets interesting.
Oh, that's very interesting.
I always hear everybody's like, oh, this is my album of the year. I'm like, what is your un-album of the year? Like, what is your least favorite album of the year?
Un-album of the year. I love that. Okay, so we're gonna gather some data and collect some evidence. We're gonna have the team meet together. And we'll get all those numbers together and present them to you in the Audio Face Awards coming later this month. It is our pleasure. Thank you very much for listening and supporting us. Bye.
Toodaloo.